September 3rd, 2013, on The Digital Story. The Canon 70D Review. A new podcast player. Know Your Lens. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I have great stuff for you today. We're going to start out with the Canon 70D DSLR. Just started shipping. And I think a lot of the retailers, such as Amazon and B&H, may have already blown through their first supply of these cameras, but there'll be more coming. And I want to talk a little bit about it because I think in the world of DSLRs, it's a very, very interesting camera. Now, it improves upon one of my favorite DSLRs of all time, the 60D. And what did I like about the 60D? I like that it wasn't quite as big as the 5D Mark II that I was shooting with at the time. I love the flip out, you know, the very angle LCD that allowed me to compose from different angles, not only for video, but also for still photography. The problem was, of course, with the 60D, was that autofocus, when you were composing on the LCD, was less than stellar. And this is a problem that the DSLRs had been having, was getting good autofocus when you're using live view, when you're composing on the LCD. Now, when you're composing through the optical viewfinder, no problem, right? But sometimes, and there are many times, that composing on the LCD can be very helpful, especially when you're working at weird angles. Weird angles are, you know, they have LCD written all over them. So the autofocusing with the LCD was not good on the 60D, nor really any of the other Canons to this point. So here comes the 70D, right? And what Canon developed is a whole new sensor, a whole new technology called dual pixel CMOS autofocus. Dual pixel CMOS autofocus. What they did essentially was figure out a way to use the pixels on the sensor to aid in live view autofocusing to the extent that the autofocusing would be acceptable both for still photography and for movie making. And I know they talk, with this camera, there's a lot of discussion about how good it is for video, and it certainly is. They're saying camcorder-like experience with the 70D. I'm not quite ready to go that far yet. It's very good. But the thing that blows me away is how good of a still camera this is. I mean, the movie making is terrific. There's a lot of things about the movie making I love, and it's one of the reasons why I like shooting with the 60D and the 70D over some of the other Canons, because it's easier to make movies with the articulated screen and so forth. So it really does have movie making written all over it, but it is far more than that. And I think if I get anything else across in my little review today on the podcast, is that this is a fantastic camera for still images also. Why do I say that? Well, for starters, you have a 20 megapixel APS-C CMOS sensor that has very good low light capability. It's an excellent sensor, both for resolution and for high ISO. But what got me really excited about this, and you know how this happens to me. What got me really going about this camera was the autofocus system for when I'm using the optical viewfinder. And what they did was they finally put in a enthusiast level camera. Now, I know the 7D has a great autofocus system, but the 60D, 50D, 40D never really quite got the autofocusing system that I wanted, and my 5D Mark II doesn't have it either. So I've never really had, you know, an autofocusing system that I was crazy about in a Canon camera. Now, the 5D Mark III has this insane autofocusing system, and for me, it's almost overkill the other way, where you've got so many sensors, and you're just like, you're looking in there, and it looks like a beehive kind of thing. What they did with the 70D was that there are 19 AF points. As you look through the viewfinder, all of them are cross-type, which is great, which means both horizontal and vertical. Then the center one, the very center one, is a high-precision f2.8 dual cross-type AF center point, which means that on fast lenses, it is particularly accurate. Now, what they did also was, and I'm going to hold the camera right here in my hand so I get this right. You have the shutter button in the front, and then you have an adjustment dial behind that. We're used to that. In between the two, they put a button that you just hit with your index finger. You just move your finger right off the shutter button. You can move back to this button. And this button allows you to toggle among three basic different types of autofocusing patterns. The first pattern is overall, where you're using all 19 points. The second one is a zone pattern, where basically you're using 9 points, and you can select, you know, where they are, in the center, to the left, to the right, up or down. And then the third option is a single point, and then you can select which point that is. Most of the time, that's going to be in the center. Now, to move from, let's say, you know, all of the autofocus points to the single point, you just have to press this button that is right next to the shutter button while you're looking through the viewfinder. You don't even have to look up. You don't have to do anything. So now suddenly you can just move through all these, you know, these three different patterns very easily. And then any of these patterns, well, the second two, then you can even fine tune them even more. And this makes it really easy, because what had happened to me in the past is that I never really trusted the zone autofocusing, because it, you know, a lot of times, especially on portraits and stuff, if the AF sensor picked the tip of the nose instead of the eye, I wasn't happy, because, you know, I really wanted the focus to be on the eye, not the tip of the nose. And so then I'd be disappointed with the image. It wouldn't be as good as I thought it could be. And so I never really trusted those zone autofocusing tools in the past, because they didn't give me precisely what I wanted. So then I ended up, you know, going with a single point, locking it in and recomposing. But there are times when it's okay to have a zone, you know, especially for street shooting, for example, on the fly event photography. There's a lot of times, especially if you're stopped down a little bit, if you're stopped down to F6, F8, even F11, well, you know, you have a little bit more latitude in depth of field. And so if you're shooting a group shot on the go, you know, where you just see some people mingling and talking, if it goes for the nose instead of the eye, you're probably okay. All right. But I never really was able to take advantage of that before, because I always thought it was a bit too much of a hassle to be switching around to the different AF patterns. The 70D changes all of that. I like all three of the patterns. I like the way they're customizable, and I like the way that I can switch between them. And of all the things on this camera, and there's a lot of things on this camera that I really like, it's the thing that I'm probably most excited about is finally having an AF system in an enthusiast level camera that is really good. That is really good. Now, on the Nikon side, I believe you guys have had that for a bit. But on the Canon side, I think the 70D is the first camera that, you know, I mean, this camera right now is $1,199 for the body, so it's $1,200. It'll probably be around $1,000, within, you know, 9 or 10 months, something right around there. That's a good price. I mean, that is a good price for a quality DSLR. And to be able to have a really good autofocusing system finally in there. I'm jazzed. I'm really jazzed about it. And hats off to Canon for providing it not only in the optical viewfinder system, but also on the LCD. They really did a good job. And I think this is the killer feature with this camera. There are a few other goodies, though. And obviously, I'm not going to cover them all in this show. But there are a few other things I want to mention. Built-in Wi-Fi is one of them. Now, I have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with the built-in Wi-Fi on the 70D. Because the last Canon camera that I tested that had built-in Wi-Fi was the PowerShot N. And there, you basically configure it like that. And then you press a button and it connects. it's really easy. So I was sort of expecting that with the 70D. And you know what? It doesn't work that way. My expectations were wrong. They were ill-founded. What you have to do, basically, is that, you have to set it up on the menu. You can have three devices paired with the camera. So I have my iPhone and my iPad mini paired with it. Use a different Canon app. I use Camera Window with the PowerShot N. I believe it's EOS Remote or something like that for the 70D. So now I have two different apps, which I thought was kind of strange. It seems like, one app, you develop one app and it would talk to all the cameras, but no. So you have two different apps. And then when you have Wi-Fi enabled on the camera, on the 70D, the movie making, you can't record video. Movie making is disabled. So, so you have Wi-Fi on when you're shooting stills. Great. Boom. You can upload them to your mobile device fairly fast once you figure out how. But if you want to record a movie, you got to turn off the Wi-Fi. And then if you want to share the stuff, then you got to turn it back on. So, I think that is, and I'm sure there's a good technical reason for it. But just from the end user standpoint, it seems a little weird to have to toggle back and forth. So that being said, when the Wi-Fi is connected and working, it does scream. It does a really good job of sending the images. Now I'm shooting RAW plus JPEG. And on the JPEG, I'm shooting the highest quality small. Small in the resolution, high quality, which still gives me about 2,700 pixels. Plenty of resolution for my iPad work. Those JPEGs just scream right over to the iPad from the 70D, and it works very well. Now, I will have to say that there's a little Wi-Fi instruction manual, and I actually had to read it. I was very disappointed in this because normally, I test so many cameras, I test so much software, that normally I don't have to read the books. I can just dig in, figure it out, and then look up a couple small things in the book. No, I dug in with the Wi-Fi, and I was going nowhere very fast, so I had to read the book. By the way, there are PDF files that come on a separate disk. I just load them on the iPad. It's very convenient so that you don't have to carry paper around. So anyway, the Wi-Fi, once you get it going, it works well. But I will tell you, you've got to take a moment, you've got to read the book, and you've got to set it up. It's not like the PowerShot N where it's just boom, boom. A couple other things they put in HDR in this camera, and they put it in a way that I really like. And that is HDR in the sense that it helps you deal with high contrast situations, not so much to create an art effect. And I love the way they did that. They have three different strengths of it, and it works very well. And it just helps you, hold both the shadow detail and the highlight detail on these very contrasty scenes. I thought it worked very well. It's nicely implemented, and I'm really happy to have it. And then they also added a multiple exposure and up to 9 frames on the multiple exposure. So, and it's pretty slick. It's a pretty slick implementation of multiple exposure, and I like it a lot. Another goodie that they brought over, something I fell in love with on the PowerShot N, and they did a variation on it, is the video snapshot, where you can just basically capture 4-second or 8-second snippets of video throughout the day, and then it builds a little movie for you. Really nice, really cool. They're fantastic. If you have this capability on, like if you have a PowerShot in, do it, because it's really a blast. And there's more and more and more. There's all sorts of stuff. The build quality is very good. The image quality on my initial tests, outstanding. You get 20 megapixels of resolution. $1,200 camera right now. It works with basically all the EF and EFS lenses. Works particularly well for movies with the STM lenses. It's quieter. The autofocusing is quieter with the STM lens. And I verified that. I have the 40 millimeter on that. And they just came out with a new 18-55 STM, I believe, that you can get as part of a kit. And so very quiet autofocusing so that the movie recording doesn't pick it up. Of course, if you're using an external microphone, it's probably not going to be that much of an issue. Autofocusing has been very fast with all of my existing lenses. I just really pleased with it. It's a terrific camera. It is worth an upgrade from the 60D. I think it's that good. It's worth an upgrade. I would sell the 60D and go for the 70D. I think it's worth it to do that. And also, if you're just looking for a very good APS-C Canon camera, this one is there. Now, the only shoe that's left to drop in all this is, when are they going to announce the 7D Mark II? And that should be a really interesting camera. If you were to hold out for anything, it could be for that. If you wanted even more of a rugged build, more weather sealing, things like that. Plus, you know, Lord knows what they're going to put in there. This one, they bumped the frame rate up to 7 frames per second. The 7D Mark II is, you know, going to be something nutsy, I'm sure. You know, if you really needed those top-end features in an APS-C camera, you might want to wait and see what they do with that. We don't know when they're going to announce it. Probably, hopefully, it will be by, you know, early next year. So we'll wait and see on that. But if you don't need that camera, I tell you, this is a heck of a camera, and I highly, highly recommend it for DSLRs. Okay, story number two. Oh, this one I am so glad to be announcing. So we have a little player function back. Now, I used to have, you know, if you used to go to the web page on the Digital Story and you went to the weekly podcast, which is always in the second slot on thedigitalstory.com, the podcast is, I used to have a little player there. And so you could listen to part of the show or all the show right there on the web page in case it wasn't convenient at the moment to go to iTunes or whatever else you happen to use. The problem was with that player was that it was a flash player. And I got tired of seeing this gap on my iPad and my iPhone where the player should be because they didn't show it. They, you know, obviously Flash does not work on iOS devices. So we started looking around. We started looking around for something that would work on all the devices because, you know, let's face it, a large chunk of this audience uses the iPhone, uses iPads, all that kind of stuff. And I wanted something that would work across all devices. So it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. Finally, we found something that we wanted, but then we had to figure out how to implement it on our site without breaking all the old podcasts. And that was really a lot of work by our sysadmin on that. Finally, we have it. We have it. So this podcast right now, you can listen to it the way that you normally listen to it. It all still works. If you have the TDS podcast app, still works. If you download it from iTunes, still works. By the way, those of you that spent the $2.99 for the TDS podcast app, I thank you. I thank you. That little bit, all these little bits help keep the show in the air. And so, you know, you have done something to help keep us in business by purchasing that app in the iTunes store. Anyway, all of those still work, but now if you go to the web page on your computer, Mac, Windows, whatever you happen to have, you will see on the article that has the show notes, you'll see now a nice little podcast player. And you can hit play, you can adjust the volume, you can start, you can stop, you can do all that kind of stuff. It works on all browsers, on all platforms, and it works on your iPhone, and it works on your iPad. So yay. So this is, I'm just really happy about this. I just figure that however you want to listen to the show, I want to be able to provide that functionality for you. And this was something that had been bugging me, having a Flash-based player. We got rid of that. We now have this JavaScript HTML5 player that works much better. And I'm just happy about it. So give it a try. Check it out. And just know that if you're rushing out the door or whatever and don't have a chance to maybe access the podcast the way you normally do, you can just pull up the web page on any device and start listening, and you're off to the races. So thanks, David, our sysadmin, for David Lentz, for getting that up and running. And I'm just happy to check it off the list. We paid for it. By the way, did I mention those of you that bought the podcast app helped support the show? These are the sort of projects that money goes to, you know, that we burn hours on these things and it costs money, and it helps support the show. All right. So I love new functionality. Third story, know your lens. Now, I think this is important for all of us. The way this story came about is that there's a lens in Micro Four Thirds I really like. It's a new lens to me. I'm actually working on a review of it that you'll probably see within the next week or two. And it's the Olympus 17mm f1.8 lens. I have it in silver with a silver OMD, and it just looks spectacular. It's such a beautiful lens, and on that camera, everything looks great. It has a manual focusing ring snap focus. So it works in autofocus mode. When you want a manual focus, you just pull the focusing ring back towards you. It goes into manual focus mode, reveals a scale, you know, all those little numbers that we like, feet and meters and all that. And you can manual focus, well damped. It's just a really nice lens. When I was researching the lens, which I do that too before I buy it, the reviews on it were, on the sharpness in particular, were mixed bag. For instance, Digital Photography Blog, in their testing, they gave it a high rating, and they gave it a recommend for the lens, including in image sharpness. I think they gave it 4.5 out of 5. SLR Gear, who is now part of ImagingResource.com, it's funny, when I read their review about it, in the beginning, they said, well, you know, it's a very sharp lens. The images are quite sharp. But then in their conclusion, they said, well, not quite as sharp as some of the competition. And I was going, okay, well, what does that mean? Is it sharp? Is it not sharp? You know, what does all that mean? And, you know, of course, they went into it about center sharpness and edge sharpness and all that sort of stuff. And I just really couldn't get to the bottom of, you know, this lens. So I did the thing that I am also recommending that you do with any of your favorite lenses. You don't have to do it with all your lenses, but any of your favorite lens, which is spend an hour doing some test shots and then look at that on your computer and really get to know your lens. Know what aperture settings it performs very well at. Know what aperture settings that if it has any weaknesses, what settings those are, and then what types of weaknesses are those. And I'll give you an example. The lens I'm talking about, the Olympus 17mm, at f1.8, it has good center sharpness, very good center sharpness, but the edge sharpness falls off a bit. It also has a little bit of vignetting. And then even in the center, Even though it's sharp, the contrast isn't quite as high as, for instance, my Panasonic, my 12 to 35 millimeter f/2.8 zoom. But then when you go to f/2.8, the edges shape up, the vignetting goes away, and the contrast improves a bit, at least on my lens. By the time I get to f/4, the lens is really just it's just operating at, top level. In fact, it's optimal performance at f/4 for me. F/5.6, still good, maybe not quite as good as f/4. And then you start to get up to 8, 11, to 16, and then you start to fall off again on the edges. Well, this is really important stuff to know. And, the thing is about our lenses is that, at least with me, I shoot all sorts of different things. So I'll shoot scenics, but I'll also shoot portraits. I'll shoot environmental portraits, just a whole variety of stuff. And for instance, a lot of times for me on an environmental portrait, 34 millimeters, which is effectively what this lens works out to be, is a good focal length because I can get the subject and some of the context and compose that in the frame nicely. Well, on an environmental portrait with this lens, I might want to shoot it at f/1.8, knowing that the edges are going to soften a bit, that maybe I'll even get a little bit of vignetting. The contrast will be slightly lower in the center, but it'll be sharp. Well, that sounds like good stuff for a portrait. Now, if I'm going to shoot something, let's say some architecture, say some street scenes with some architecture and stuff, then I'm probably going to go to f/4 or f/5.6 with that lens, knowing that I'm going to get sharpness across the board, and that I'm not going to get vignetting, and that contrast is going to be pretty good. This is all the same lens. And many of our lenses have these personalities, have these characteristics. And I think it's really worth it to spend the time to get to know them. Now, how do I do this? I just sit down. I don't even put it on a tripod. I just sit down with the camera, and I find a scene that has interesting stuff, from right to left. The test shots that you'll see when I publish the 17 millimeter, I actually shot in my garden that has a fence and there's detail from edge to edge. And it's a little bit more interesting than shooting a bookcase, which you see a lot, and lens tests. So I just sit there. I kind of line it up. I know how I'm going to, frame the picture, and I take a shot at f/1.8 in aperture priority. Then I take a shot at f/2.8. And take a shot at f/4. And I hand hold these things because in real life, that's what I'm doing. I'm hand holding these shots. So I'm not putting this camera on a tripod hardly ever. And if I am, it's not for sharpness. It's for, some wacky night scene or something. And I go all the way through. And then if I want to compare it to another lens, then, I'll just, in the same position, I'll put the other lens on and I'll go ahead and shoot, through all the f-stops with that. Then I pull them up in aperture, and I mark them, and I use the loop, and I look at the center, and I look at the edges, and I make notes as to how this lens performs, and I really get to know it. And then I remember that, or I can carry the notes in my iPhone if I want. And then when I'm out in the field working, I know how to use this lens. I'll leave it in program for general shooting. But the minute I want to do environmental portrait, I'm probably going to go to f/1.8 with that lens. And the moment I'm going to do something, let's say a group shot or something like that, I'm probably going to go to f/4. And just because I know it. It's really worth it. I mean, you make the money investment in these optics, make a little time investment and finish it off. And really get to know your favorite pieces of glass and be comfortable with them, and then use them to the best of their ability for what you need to do. Portraits, landscape, architecture, whatever. I'll tell you, it's really satisfying. It's in the investment, like I said, you can do the whole thing in an hour, really. In fact, it's kind of fun. It's kind of nerdy and geeky kind of fun stuff. So know your lens, and then you will be happy that you made that time investment. Okay, just a little bit of Virtual Camera Club business. I'm going to dash through this because I have been yakety-yak today. I'm recording this podcast on Sunday night. I usually do it during Monday, but Monday is Labor Day, and I have some plans. I did not want to take a chance on, you know, not being able to get to this. So I'm doing it Sunday night, and I have to tell you, I'm not used to doing these things late at night. Let me just put it that way. So I'm kind of rambling on a little bit here. Anyway, okay, here we go. Aperture Workshop. It's coming up in November. It's going to be on the weekend in November. And I'm pulling it up right now. I got my little calendar here, and I'm rolling through it. It's going to be on the weekend, the 16th and 17th of November. And I tell you, if Apple happens to release a new version of Aperture between now and then, we're going to cover it in this workshop. If not, we're going to do all sorts of exciting things. Like, for instance, have you seen my portrait retouching training that just was released on lynda.com? It's really cool, all using Aperture tools. And then I have another one coming out this week on a product enhancement just with Aperture. So we are going to be covering the basics, and we're going to be covering portrait retouching, and we're going to cover product enhancement with Aperture, and then some other goodies too. I mean, this is a terrific workshop. 2 days, we do a model shoot, and we usually do two shoots, one of them a model shoot with a professional model. Here at the studio, we have a great, great time. So if you're interested in that, the semi-info form is working on the workshops page. Just go to thedigitalstory.com, go to workshops, send me info, choose Aperture from the pop-up menu. Know that's on the 16th and 17th. It might be listed on different dates there because I changed them, but it's on the 16th and 17th, and I will send you a reservation form. You will not regret it. You will have a blast. And like I said, if they do release Aperture 4, we're going to cover it. Okay, photo assignment. We have a new photo assignment. It's Grab Shot for September. Might sound familiar to you. Remember, we used to do Grab Shots here on the site. When I first started, and we did them for many years, we did Grab Shots. I kind of stopped doing it because, you know, we've implemented so many other things. I thought it would make a great photo assignment. Grab Shot is the photo assignment for September. Something that you saw on the go, something you didn't expect to take, wasn't a planned shot, but you love it. That's a grab shot. So that is our photo we have. And I just posted a gallery for Duality on the site right now. You have to look at it. It's wonderful. You guys that contributed to Duality, you did a great job. It's a fantastic gallery. And as are the images for Street Scene, which will be the next one that I publish. And one of those shots will be chosen by the good folks at Sizzle Picks as the Sizzle Picks pick of the month, and they will get a free Sizzle Picks. Brought to you by Sizzle Picks, SizzlePix.com. High quality output for your photography. It's like a retina display you can hang on the wall. And they have a sale going right now, the summer sale, 20% off of Sizzle Picks. 20% off. All you got to do is put The Digital Story or TDS in the comments field and you will get 20% off. But this sale ends September 21st. So if you're thinking about getting a Sizzle Picks as a gift for yourself or for someone that's a close friend or family member, you want to do it before the 21st because you will get 20% off. SizzlePix.com. And finally, wrap up the show today with our good friends over at Red River Paper. They have a rockin' Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. They supply you with just about any style of inkjet paper you want. They sell ink for Epson and Canon printers. You get the paper at about 40% off. Just as high quality, sometimes I think better, my personal testing. That's because they make the paper and they sell the paper. Red River Paper. You cannot miss with these guys. And if, you know, what I advise is I would get your paper and your ink in order now, because when the holidays come up, you might want to be printing some stuff out quickly. Okay, well, that's going to do it for me. Next week, oh my God, there's going to be a lot to report next week. I'm telling you, you have to tune in next week. Just trust me on this. A bunch of NDAs wear off, and I will be talking. Until then, go out, take some shots, pick a lens, and do this lens test on it and really get to know it, and then meet me back here next week. Until then, bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.